I want to say something that you may not have heard a leader of a church or ministry say, and it's this: it is absolutely impossible to understand God. You may not have heard many leaders in ministry say that because it is our job to look like we have all the answers. I'd like to say it like this: because we're leaders in the faith, we try to have so much faith that we don't need faith. What I mean by that is we try to use our faith to figure everything out so that we don't have to have faith anymore. But once you've lived long enough and you've led long enough, you realize that it is impossible to figure out God. Hebrews 11:6 reminds us that without faith, it is impossible to what? Please God. So we're hustling backwards if we believe that one day we'll have enough faith to where we won't need to trust God anymore. I believe this is what God was implying when he spoke through the prophet Isaiah: my thoughts are nothing like your thoughts. My ways are nothing like your ways. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so are my ways above yours. See, faith is our ability to trust what we can't track. Faith is our ability to be able to believe even when God's behavior does not line up with what our vision for our life may be. That being said, there's a way to experience less frustration in our faith during our seasons when we have to trust what we can't track. And it can be helpful to understand how God filters his decisions for our destiny. God's goal is his glory. What do I mean by that? When God is making a decision about what to do in our lives, guess what? His filter is not necessarily our happiness. His filter is not necessarily, it can be, but it's not necessarily our comfort. God's highest filter for the decisions that he's making in our lives is his glory. Does this question sound familiar? I know I've asked it. I don't know if you have. God, if you loved me, how could you let this happen? God, if you loved me, how could you have let them leave me? God, if you loved me, how could you have let me lose them? God, if you loved me, why do I continue to have more month than money? God, if you loved me, why do I continue to lead but my children don't listen? God, if you loved me, you would be making different decisions for me. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were very tight and close-knit family. They were also known as friends of Jesus. But despite their relationship with Jesus, they still had challenging seasons of their faith. Despite their relationship with Jesus, despite how close they were, they still had seasons where they struggled. John 11:5-6 says, now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. that doesn't make sense. Because Jesus, if you love me and you heard your homeboy was sick, why are you staying where you are? God, if you really cared, then why don't you seem to be paying attention to my circumstance? See, this is the tension of the text. Because he loved Lazarus, but when he heard Lazarus needed him, he didn't move. Have you ever been in a situation to where you were praying, you were trusting, you were looking for God to show up, but it seemed as if he was staying where he was? Have you ever had a situation in your life where you needed God to show up, but it did not seem like God was moving? Look, come on, you can keep it real. New Hope is a safe place. Have you ever had an expectation from God but been disappointed? I always say that disappointment comes from unrealistic expectations. We had an expectation of God that he did not meet. Therefore, we were disappointed. God, I need you, but you ain't moving. Here's one thing I learned about Jesus that I love. It's actually an excellent leadership trait to have. God never let his heart get in the way of his hands. That's an excellent leadership trait to have. Some of us struggle leading because we let our heart get in the way of our hands. We let our emotions get in the way of what is best. When we see people struggling, when we see people hurting, we like to intervene, but because it's hard to see people that we love hurting, but sometimes it's best to take a step back and see what God can do. Let me talk to mamas for a minute. Mama, I know it's hard to see little Johnny hurting, but little Johnny ain't little no more. Little Johnny's 35, and it may be time for little Johnny to become big Johnny and get his own place to stay and get his own and start paying his own. You can't let your heart get in the way of your hands. Being a leader means sometimes taking a step back and letting people work their way through their frustrations. I got good news for my beautiful daughter. She's sitting right here. She's 14 years old. And one day, she's going to have somebody else's last name. And guess what? She's not going to be able to come to daddy. And we who have been married know that marriage doesn't always go the way that you want it to go. But guess what? When you get somebody else's last name, I don't have to pay your bills. I'm going to be able to take a step back and let you suffer a little bit. Why? Because sometimes what is hurting you can help. See, that's the tension of the text. That sometimes love means letting people grow. Sometimes love means taking a step back and letting folk figure it out. Because if I step in and do it for you, if I always give you the answers, how can you grow? How can you get better? How can faith grow if your faith is never tested? A faith that isn't tested is a faith that can't be trusted. And so sometimes God will take a step back and let you trust. I can only imagine Mary and Martha's disappointment with this divine delay, especially because there's no wasted words in scripture. It reminds us that they were friends. They would often kick it at Dave and Buster's. They would hit the Top Golf. They would go to California Dreaming and grab a bite to eat. They would hit the Hawks game. They would go see the Green Jackets play. They were followers and friends of Jesus. And here's where it gets difficult. Because they were follower and friends, they had seen him do miracles for other people. Oh, y'all gonna act holy. Maybe I'm the only one that has a problem sometimes when I see God moving in other people's lives and not moving in mine. God, they don't even go to church. Why am I depressed? God, they don't even give. Why am I still broke? God, I'm pure after all. Why do I continue to be the bridesmaid and never the bride? God, why are you doing miracles for folk who ain't even your friend, but when I need you, you sitting still? Oh, I know y'all too holy to think like that. Maybe let me testify then. Sometimes I'm wondering, I'm faithful, I'm praying, I'm fasting, I'm worshiping, I'm leading, I'm serving, and God, you gonna sit still on me? I'm almost positive Mary and Martha were having some cognitive confusion about Christ, because it's hard to see God move in other people's lives yet sitting still in mine. Jesus' delay led to the death of his friend. Oh, it's right there in John 11:21. I'm not making it up. Martha said to Jesus, "Ooh, this is tough. Lord, if only you had been there, my brother would not have died." Have you ever felt like Jesus was missing? She's saying, "I prayed and you did nothing." Martha's frustrated and aggravated here. I can hear it in her voice. "I sent for you and you didn't show up. If you would have been paying attention, Jesus, if you would have been on your job, my brother wouldn't be in the grave. Jesus, if you would have been on your job, it wouldn't have been my mom that got cancer. Jesus, if you would have been on your job, it wouldn't be my child in prison. Jesus, if you would have been on your job, I wouldn't be the one filing for divorce. Jesus, if you would have been on your job, I wouldn't have been the one that got laid off." Have you ever asked Jesus, "Why aren't you on the job?" This is real, y'all. This is not any empty preaching rhetoric. This is somebody who's struggling, trying to figure out what their faith is really about. Because what's the point of having a relationship with Jesus if you're not going to be on your job? I remember asking Jesus, y'all know my story, at 12, 13, 14, with a childlike faith, to heal my mother who had gotten HIV that turned into AIDS from her husband. And I knew God could heal her. Yet at 15, I'm at a funeral for a woman who had been faithful to her husband but lost her life. God, what are you doing? Some of you have your own story. You ask God to heal, yet you still hurting. You ask God for peace, but you're still in pain. You asking God for joy, yet you still struggle with anxiety and depression. You asking God for courage, yet you still battle with fear. You asking God for healing, yet you still going through chemo. What, God? Are you paying attention? Some of you are like, this is the most depressing message I ever heard. Yeah. Here it is. It's about to get better. Sometimes when it feels like God is ignoring you, is when he's most involved. Yeah, sometimes when you feel like God is missing is when he's about to do the greatest miracle you've ever seen. Just because he's not moving does not mean he's not ministering. I don't know if you all had grandparents like I had, but I used to love visiting my grandparents for the summer when my grandfather wasn't making me do all his chores like cut his grass and wash his car. And I would go at nighttime and then all I would have to do is wake up and I would get breakfast. And nobody cooked breakfast like my grandmom and grandfather. I mean, you could smell the salmon croquettes when you were still in the bed. You could smell the country ham. You could hear the bacon crackling. I won't talk too much about it because y'all gonna run out and go to Cracker Barrel, but you could smell the food, but the problem was it would take so long. Like I could smell it, but I couldn't eat it. I could hear it, but I couldn't taste it. But I learned to be patient. Why? Because the longer it took, the better it tasted. And God works like that sometimes. The longer you wait, the better it's going to taste. Because there's some miracles that can't be microwaved. There's some stuff that I can't make happen overnight. Why? Because sometimes I gotta put the miracle in the crock pot. Sometimes I gotta let the supernatural simmer. Sometimes I gotta test your faith, because the longer I make you wait, the greater you gonna praise me when I come through. The more I make you doubt, the greater you gonna have delight. There's some miracles that can't be microwaved. There's some stuff that's too magnificent to throw in the microwave. You don't want some stuff microwaved. Let me talk to the single ladies. Ladies, stop rushing. You don't want a man that's microwaved. You want a man that sat in the crock pot with Christ. You want a man that doesn't just have muscles, but has a godly mind. You don't. Here, all the young people right here. All the young ladies, all the single ladies. Wave your hand, all the single. Yeah, if you ain't married, you're single. I know you may be sitting next to your boyfriend. You're still single. Here it is. All you A-type, lions, ambitious, you want the world. You don't want microwaved money. Because sometimes I can testify, the faster you earn, the faster it exits. If it comes easy, it goes easy. You want to be able to trust. You want to be able to wait. You want things to be stable. You want a deep-rooted faith. You want deep-rooted family. You want deep-rooted finances. Why? Because the deeper my roots, the stronger I can stand in the storm. Here it is. This is why Jesus says in John 11:4, this sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Everybody say, what glory? I'm glad you asked. Here it is, verse 14. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And here's where it gets gangster. And for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there. Yeah, that Jesus. We don't like that Jesus. That Jesus is too raw and too real. Jesus said, I'm glad I didn't show up. Why are you glad? Because I'm working on something greater. I'm working so that you may believe. There's something greater than your peace, and that's your faith. There's something greater than your comfort, and that's your belief in Jesus Christ. There's something greater than your happiness, and that's your holiness. He says, I'm glad I did not show up, because when I do, you really gonna believe. I had to let it die so that you could see that I'm the resurrection and the life. I had to let you go hungry so that you could see I am the bread of life. I had to let you lose somebody that you loved in your life so you could see that I was the Prince of Peace. I needed to take some stuff away from you so you would start to focus more on your faith. Can anybody give God praise? I'm thankful for when you were not there. Yeah, anybody can give God praise for when he shows up, but can you give God praise for when he didn't? I can testify as an aging young man that as I look back, even on the passing of my mother, I have seen God's glory. I can look back at seasons where I suffered and say, God, thank you, not for answering my prayer, but thank you for ignoring me. Because guess what? Unique does not know what's best for Unique. Unique thinks that he's smart, but he ain't that smart. Unique think he have it all together, but he don't have it all together like that. Only God can see the end from the beginning. So Unique, even when I'm saying no, I'm saying yes to something else. Unique, even when I act like I'm not showing up, guess what, son? I am right there with you. Don't be mad when God doesn't move the way that you want him to, because to bring back what he said to Isaiah, my ways are not your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts. As high as the heavens are above the earth, so are my ways above your ways. You are not on my level. You cannot think how I think. You cannot do what I do. Like Rick Warren said, man trying to understand God is like an ant trying to understand the internet. It's not gonna happen. He said, I'm glad I wasn't there. This is what Isaiah 64:8 meant when it said, but now, O Lord, you are our Father. We are the clay, and you are our potter. We are all the work of your hand. He's the designer. We're the dirt. The manufacturer gets to decide the purpose of the and plan of whatever is made. God gets to decide what he wants to do with our story. And guess what? He is using our story for his glory. Everybody said he's using my story for his glory. He's the creator. We are the creature. He is the designer. We are the work of his hands. We are the clay. He is the potter. And the potter gets to decide the purpose of the clay. God gets to decide. You might as well go on and get over it. Our arms are too short to box with God. You might as well go ahead and submit your will to his. You might as well go ahead and submit your plan to his purpose. The man has his plans, but it's the Lord that guides his steps. And the sooner we figure out that God is guiding, the less we have to worry, the less we have to stress, because God's plans are greater than ours. Why? Because when he gets the glory, we'll get the good. 2 Corinthians 3:2 says, your lives are a letter written in our hearts. Everyone can read and recognize our good work among you. When God is working, he's doing it so other people can recognize who he is in your life. Everybody say, my life is a letter. It says our lives are a letter written. Can I ask you a question? What does your letter say? Will your letter speak of your faithfulness? Will your letter speak of your righteousness? Will your letter speak of your grit? Will your letter speak of your resilience? Will your letter speak of your holiness? Will your letter speak of your trust in the midst of trouble? Will your letter speak of your faith even in the middle of frustration? Will your letter speak about praying even in the midst of your persecution? What will your letter say? Plain and simple, Jesus needed these people to know he was God. Jesus told her, verse 23, your brother will rise again. Yes, Martha said, he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day. Jesus told her, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. You missed it. There are seven, since we're doing a series on John, I am statements in John. I am the bread of life, John 6, 35, 41, 48, 51. John 8, 12, I am the light of the world. John 10, 7 and 9, I am the door of the sheep. Let's keep going. I am the good shepherd, John 10, 11, 14. I am the way, the truth, and the light, John 14, 6. I am the true vine, John 15, 1 and 5. And right here, John 11, 25, I am the resurrection and the life. Let's go to Bible school. John isn't a synoptic gospel. Matthew is synoptic. Mark is synoptic. Luke is synoptic, meaning it summarizes the life of Jesus in similar ways. John is not synoptic. Matthew opens up with genealogy. Mark opens up with the baptism of Jesus. Luke opens up with prophecy about Jesus. I love John because John opens up and let's get to the point. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. John 1:14, and he made his dwelling amongst us. John was written to prove one point and one point only, that Jesus is God, that Jesus is the creator, that Jesus is not just human, that Jesus was holy, that Jesus wasn't just 100% man, that Jesus was 100% God. John wrote to remind us that Jesus is God. I am the resurrection and the life. What you looking for, you looking at. I am. That's so cold-blooded. When I get to heaven, I'm going to say, Jesus, will you say that to me one time? I am the resurrection. Martha, don't get it twisted. Martha tried to get deep. She tried to get theological. This is what preachers call eschatology, the study of the end times. Eschatology. She's talking about end times. Jesus talking about this right now. You looking at him. I am the resurrection and the life. John 11, 38. Let's look at it together. Jesus once more deeply moved. I want to pause here parenthetically and say that just because Jesus isn't moving doesn't mean he doesn't care. He was hurting how they were hurting. But he was too masterful of a leader to let his hurt step in when he wasn't called to help. He came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time, there's a bad odor, for he has been there 4 days. I always equate Martha to being the female Peter, because if you know Martha, Martha was a woman who often could not keep her foot out of her mouth. Martha loved to have control of situations. Are there any Marthas? Don't raise your hand. Martha was the one that would tell you that what you wanted to do wasn't right. Martha was the one who wouldn't do it if it didn't make sense. Martha is sitting here telling the Creator about biology. But Jesus is better than me. Because I would have had some smart, like, "Martha, stay in your lane. Martha, I made you. You don't think I know when bodies are going to become..." Listen, Martha, let me have this. "Martha, stay out the way." Martha's like, "Jesus, don't. You don't know what you're doing." "Jesus, let me give you a little advice. Jesus, if you open that grave, it's going to stink." Ain't y'all glad Jesus ain't like me? He says, "Didn't I tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took the stone away. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you. I thank you because you've heard me. I know that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, so that they believe you sent me." When he said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Man, I thought y'all would be a better crowd than the nine. Y'all got 2 more hours of sleep. Let me try this. Y'all a tough crowd. Jesus went to the tomb of a dead man. Maybe this will help. You didn't know this part. The reason Jesus waited 4 days, I believe, is because the rabbis, the Jewish rabbis, had a superstition that the spirit would hover over the body for 3 days. So it was possible that if a person was dead for less than 3 days, that their spirit would re-enter their body and they could come back alive. So Jesus said, "I'm gonna do something that can't be debated." Yeah. Yeah, some of you getting it. Yeah. Jesus wants to do something in your life that can't nobody argue with. That's why you had to wait. Because if he did it too soon, you would think you worked it out. If he did it too soon, you would be giving your intellect the credit. If you did it too soon, you'd be giving your education the credit. If you did it too soon, you'd be telling folks you pulled yourself up by your own bootstraps. Jesus said, "Nah, I'm not going to get him in 1 day. Nope, I'm not going to get him in 2 days. Nope, I'm not going to get him in 3 days. I'm going to get it in 4, because I don't want anybody to be able to steal my glory." So Jesus goes to the tomb when Lazarus is not just dead, he's dead. And he goes to the tomb and he says, "Lazarus, get up." That's not the shouting part. The shouting part is in verse 44. When the dead man, listen, because if anybody else would have said to the dead man, "Get up," the dead man would still be dead. This is why Jesus says, I'm the resurrection and the life. For those of us who have placed our faith in Jesus, this is why. Because if Buddha would have went to the grave and said, gee, Lazarus, get up, guess where Lazarus would still be? In the grave. If Muhammad went to the funeral and said, Lazarus, get up, guess who would still be in the grave? Lazarus. But when your Lord and Savior came to the grave, the dead man got up. But guess what? Here's what really should blow your mind. If you have given your life to Christ, Lazarus ain't the only one that has gotten up out that grave. Can anybody give God praise this morning that Lazarus is not the only name he called? I'm going to give God praise because he called my name. He said, Unique, get out that grave. He said, anybody who has placed their faith in Jesus was a dead man that got up. Let me try this out. Anybody who has confessed their sins, God is faithful and just to forgive you of your sins and cleanse you of all unrighteousness. Anybody that has placed their faith, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believeth in him would not perish but have everlasting life. Oh, you need more. Anybody who's placed their faith in Jesus, who's confessed with their mouth but believed in their heart, shall be saved. You ought to give God praise that you got out that grave, that your sin has been paid for, that you don't have to live in that grave of depression anymore. You don't have to live in that grave of doubt anymore. You don't have to live in that grave of fear anymore. You don't have to live in that grave of hate anymore. You don't have to live in that grave of forgiveness anymore. Oh, I hadn't hit your grave yet. You don't have to live in that grave of lust anymore. You don't have to live in that grave of selfishness anymore. You don't have to live in that grave of greed anymore. Can you give God praise that you out the grave? Yeah, I'm living my best life now. I'm out the grave. I'm celebrating who Jesus is. I'm celebrating that he called my name. He didn't have to call my name because I was negative and nasty, but he called it anyway. He didn't have to call my name because I was selfish, but he called it anyway. He didn't have to call my name, but it's grace. It's sufficient. Oh, I got good news for somebody. You don't have to be good for him to call your name. Oh, that's good news for somebody. You're looking at a double AIDS orphan baby daddy convicted felon, but he's still. That's so good. I thought somebody else would be excited. Hey, he can be a prostitute and he'll call your name. You can be a drug dealer, and guess what? He'll call your name. You could be selfish and self-centered and narcissistic, and he'll call your name. He's not calling it because of how good you are. He's calling it because he's God, and he's chosen you, and your story is for his glory. Your life is for his light. Let me get my laptop before your pastor doesn't invite me back. I don't want to overextend my time. Here it is. God is calling somebody's name this morning. Will you respond? We were all dead in sin, shaped in iniquity. But God came to the grave site of our life and he said, get up. You don't have to live in the grave any longer. I am the resurrection and the life. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you're going through, but Jesus wants to use your story for his glory. Your life is for his light. Your pain is for his purpose. And yes, it hurts sometimes. It hurts to lose ones that we love. It hurts to see people we love suffer. It hurts. But here's the best part about being a Christian, is that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. And even if we lose a battle, we win the war. Guess what? This story isn't about Lazarus getting out the grave. Because you want to know what happened to Lazarus? He died again. Lazarus is in a grave. This story was to point to the power that God has to bring life to dead spirits, so that one day, no matter what happens, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. One day, even though he may tell me no on earth, he's telling me yes in eternity. One day, he's going to wipe every tear away. One day, he's going to make it all make sense. One day, I'm going to be walking on streets of gold. One day, even if I'm broke today, I'm going to live in the best gated community, because it's not going to be steel. It's going to be gates of pearl. One day, it'll all make sense. But today, understand, God's filter is his glory. Whatever I have to do to maximize the potential of purpose that I have on the earth, you're chosen. So God, I'm praying today that you will strengthen us so that we're more willing to allow our stories to lead to your glory. God, I don't want anyone to think that you don't care, because there are people going through situations that are more painful than some of us can believe. And even though they're praying, they may not be seeing their circumstance change. Matter of fact, they may have a Mary, Martha, and Lazarus testimony. It may be getting worse. So I don't want to be insensitive today to whoever that person is. I want to pray for them that even in their pain, they trust that you have a purpose. That even though they're hurting, I want them to believe with all their heart, all their mind, all their soul, and all their strength that you're willing to help them and that you will. And I want to pray that even though they may take loss on earth, that their hope will be in heaven. It hurts to hear no. It hurts to hear not right now. But it sure does help to know that your ways are higher than ours. So Father, I thank you for being Mr. Know-it-all. I thank you that we can trust you in the midst of trouble. And I want to pray for my church family that's exactly what we'll do. That you will add some super to our natural and maybe make it a little easier for us. That you will add some holy to our human. That we won't let the enemy get into our head and convince us that you don't care. Because even though you may not be moving according to our plan, help us to trust that you are ministering. And I pray that we'll be anxious for nothing, but in everything with prayer and thanksgiving, we'll continue to make our requests be made known unto you. And that the peace of God that passes all understanding will guard our heart and minds in Christ Jesus.